When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to season 2, episode 1 of the Bridgerton coverage here over on Post Show Recaps. Thank you so much for joining us again if you have watched our season 1 coverage. If this is your first time listening to us, welcome. We are the Dark Walk crew over here to get you through this season. Let's talk through everything going on and just, you know, we're trying to keep it as low spoiler or no spoiler as we can. So bear with us. We apologize if we slip up here and there. The four of us read the books, so there might creep in a little bit of background from there. Just, you know, wanted to lead the PSA from the start. But before we get any further, I am your host, Sasha Joseph. And I'm joined by, you know, a capital B, beautiful, amazing team here with me to talk through season 2, episode 1. I have Kirsten here. Kirsten, how are you? We made it to season 2.
Yes, we did it. We finally have new Bridgerton. I feel like it has been such a journey to get here on the Dark Walk, but we've arrived. New Bridgerton is here. I have been so flipping busy that I've literally only had time to watch this first episode, and I am very much looking forward to watching the rest. I'm going to get back into it after we record this, so happy to be here.
Yeah, I watched all of it, I will say so, but I think I kind of forgot a little bit of it. If that tells you anything about my thoughts on this season. but with that, you know, I'm still excited for all the subplots. That's my biggest takeaway from this season.
Perfect.
And we are also joined by Sarah, all the way from Australia. Listen, like I said, we are global in our coverage. So, Sarah, how are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm pretending to enjoy this weak English tea. It's not to my taste. I like it stronger and spicier, let me put it that way. I'm coming to you from the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and I acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded. So we read the book, and if anyone's interested in that, go back to our previous episode. We go through book two, which was fun. This thing that we're watching now, I'm very excited to have a new Bridgerton season. I'm excited to have new faces. I've seen four of the episodes. I had intended to watch them one by one as we podcast, but you know that rollover feature on Netflix is very, very tempting. So I rolled over.
Yes. And last but certainly not the least, we have Geneva here. Welcome. I know we've been talking about this a lot. So how are you? How are you feeling about this season?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. Similarly to you, Sasha, I am an impatient human, so I've watched the whole thing. But I think sometimes when you watch the whole thing at once, it all becomes a blur in terms of what happens when. So I'm looking forward to, as we go individually, to look at each episode to kind of, you know, focus on that particular here and now, that moment. And I'm very, very excited about the new characters that we have and the new actors that we have involved within the season. I saw a couple different interviews here and there with some of the new cast members, and it's really great to see like how well they got along with the original cast, especially you know, the Bridgertons and the Featheringtons and the people who play those roles. I think clearly tell there is a lot of chemistry between the characters. And so that's one thing that I'm looking forward to talking about. But, you know, of course, you know, there's always those thoughts based off of, like, you know, the last podcast we did when it comes to what we were thinking we could see versus what we are seeing. So I'm sure that'll, you know, come into play more in the discussion later on in the season, but very excited to talk with you all.
Yeah. Big agree. And I will say, just going into it, I was pretty disappointed just by lack of Anthony and Kate content. But I loved all the attention, like all these new characters are getting. So I just, you know, hold that, at least that's my bias as I recap this season. But, you know, I feel like it's important to share that, where I don't necessarily want to say, oh, I hated the season, I'm over it. But it's more that I think there were a lot of holes that could have, you know, that were rather answered in the book. And I spoke with my friends that didn't read the book, and even they were asking me a lot of questions like, well, why is this a thing and why is that a thing? So it's just, you know, something for us to hold, and we'll try to at least give some background, or, you know, like this time, this is what they missed, or we'll try to fill in the blanks for you like that. So, you know, buckle up with us as we lead you through this, you know, very lit walk, I will say, because no dark walk here. but with that, I think let's start our coverage of Capital. Episode 2, Season 1, A New Diamond is Found. So how did we feel about this?
Well, first of all, I like how, you know, no longer is the Duke the male lead. So they cut all of that nasty-ass facial hair off of every single Bridgerton boy. Because they were like, oh, shoot, the audience is supposed to find these men appealing. And they instantly made them more attractive.
Everyone had a glow-up. Everyone. Yeah. And I was like, this is great. Everyone looks great. So that also made me more excited. You know, at this point, they're, you know, I guess now they're at the point of, although, you know, later on when we, you know, see certain people come back, I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So we have more hair than we had before. But I think it was good that they gave Anthony a haircut, because I think it was
he needed it a lot.
Oh my god, they were horrible.
Yeah. Unfortunately, poor Penelope is still in boob jail, but she starts to get more flattering gowns as the season goes on, and I think that's very nice as we see her start to get her own money, and we feel like, ah, now she can dress as she would like, but certainly not in this first episode where the yellow frock is still front and center, as are her assets.
You gotta put the goods on sale, okay? Penelope's looking for a husband, and they put her on display.
I do not mind them being on display. It's the tightness and the chokeness of, it's the height, really, of the bosom towards the throat. I worry for
people
her.
People don't know how to show off large breasts. It's been a problem for time immemorial, obviously. We also get to see... I feel like season one, when Eloise was like dressed up for the ball, everyone was like really criticizing her, and like the hair was bad. But other than that, I thought she looked fine. But with her like ready for her debut, I was like, what did they do to her?
Yeah, so she had a horrible wig, right? Like the weird one without the bangs, that wig. I think that was like the first half of the show was like her in that weird wig. And then we move to the bangs. Thank God, because I think she looks much better with the bangs. But, oh my, yeah. I don't know. Like, Daphne got such a moment. And, like, this is supposed to be, right, the second Bridgerton girl, the one that's just as beautiful, right? Like, we never heard that she's ugly or anything. So I love that, because in Capital R Rake, it really, it begins with all of the Bridgerton family waiting on Eloise as she dresses up. And I think Eloise, like the actress, did a great job. Like, because that's exactly how I felt like Eloise would act, where she's like, why are y'all doing so much? I don't want this.
Like, yeah. It's funny because it's like, I know she's, you know, acting and she does it well, but it's always just funny. I'm just like even I forgot which episode this happens. Maybe it was this. I think it was this one. Even like her dancing with her brother. Like, just like. So it's just great.
Yeah.
One thing they've done so beautifully with the costumes for this season two, the sleeve of the season appears on many of the ladies' gowns. And I really like that, because it's just this lovely nod by the designers and the makers of these costumes, which are just glorious. And they talk, the costumes talk about the characters as well. When we get Lady Featherington in her sort of, you know, pre-1940s shiny floral things with matching gloves, which is just incredible. But there's a new sleeve, which is the two pieces folded one over the other, and we see that throughout many of the women's gowns. And I like that, because that would be something. Ah, are you wearing last season's sleeve or are you wearing this season's sleeve? And I really, really liked that.
You've got to have the new sleeve. I do... Okay, so, like, is it cute that Penelope brings back Whistledown just in time to, like, quote, save Eloise from her whatever her debut in front of the Queen? Sure, right. Whatever. But guess what? Eloise will have her own season. This is not Eloise's season. I don't understand why she's being treated as the main character in this first episode. Enough. She will get her season. This is about Anthony.
Don't even get me. Just buckle up, sister.
Yes.
I'll just say that for you.
Thank you for the next.
Yeah, because agreed, I think that is, I hope that's not a super spoiler, but maybe I'm prepping you, Kirsten. But yeah, there, it's too much importance on all the side characters. It's not just Eloise, right. I will say. So why is she the opening act when Kate should be the opening act, right? Like, it's all of the Bridgertons like waiting, and it's not Anthony that we're opening when the book opens with him.
Yeah, like we have a whole episode, which, as we talked about in the pre-show, the episodes are long.
Yeah.
They are not like a normal episode, which is kind of rude, to be honest. And we don't have any idea of Anthony's motivation of why he has chosen this year to get married, why he's so insistent on getting married now. And we're starting with Eloise, who like... it's fine, but guess what? She gets her own story later. Enough.
Yeah. And I think some stuff that I've seen is that they've kind of said they would be mixing, you know, I guess the content from different books a bit. But I think
this content doesn't happen in any of the books. We never see Eloise's debut ever.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying that that's a thing, but I'm just saying that in general, like when it comes to the people like who are having certain storylines, like in this, you know, it seems like we see some elements like, you know, Benedict and, you know, Eloise get like a presence in this season when in reality that shouldn't necessarily be the situation considering what we know.
Certainly for the first image, let's have Kate galloping through the morning park with the mist with that cloak and her wonderful
they could have started
platen.
With
yeah, mean, like why wouldn't you start with that?
It makes no sense. She's beautiful, but she's more than beautiful. She's spirited, she's sharp-witted, she's quick. I mean, you can start the season thinking that we watched the previous season. You know, it's okay to assume some knowledge. And so when we see, you know, Anthony trotting home from his tryst with a lovely woman, we don't need to have seen that. We can gather that, or we can certainly see it later. We've been longing for her to arrive. Surprise us, give her to us as the first image. Why not? Because we all, you know, we all live in this world of images. We've seen, we've read about it, we've talked about it for a year. We know she's coming, we know what she looks like. Just throw her at us. Let us have her.
Yeah. And I think maybe they wanted to bring us back to like a sense of like familiarity with bringing us to the Bridgertons. But, you know, again, I kind of agree with the sense that because that's not necessarily, well, the focus is on Anthony anyway, so it's kind of weird that the focus is on
start later. It's a screenwriting truism. Start later, start your scene later, start your episode later.
And yeah, it's just odd. I think it would have been really powerful if they had started it with Kate, you know, breaking convention by riding astride, but no, they don't do that. We start straight at the Queen's supposed to be choosing a diamond, which I still like. I don't think the queen was like, oh, I will clearly declare who the number one person is. Like, the queen is busy. The queen doesn't have time to worry about this shit.
Yeah, I feel like the queen, she's a character everyone loved so much, but this season they really made her into a little bit of like a gossip. I feel like because she's like last season, she was having fun with it, but she still held her presence and her power versus, right, this scene even, she's just like, oh, I have to stop everything, right? Because everyone's being paraded, all these women or these girls are being paraded to be the new diamond. And then Eloise is already having a panic attack as she's about to walk out with this, like, ridiculous feather on her head. And then everything just stops because a stupid paper comes. There's
like
no,
someone like, who they don't even know who they are.
Like, it just, it like takes away. It takes away the queen's power.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I didn't understand. Again, like, oh, that's my issue with this whole like writing of this season where they just took these characters that they introduced themselves and are now like changing them up on me, because the queen to me would have been like gotten, you know, like some kind of a like that guy, right, would have given her the gossip that works for her, would have given her some indication that, hey, the paper's here. And then she would have either hurried it up or been like, oh, they really need, you know, me, and I'm the reason this is starting, you know, instead of this weird like stop everything. But Eloise is happy.
Yeah, but also, why is Eloise so freaked out about being presented at court when she's literally had one-on-one conversations with the queen last season? Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And she's also been bred for it. Yes, she objects to it. Yes, she objects to marriage. Yes, she wants the choice that Colin had. Yes, yes, yes. But she's also been brought up in this house. I didn't understand her lack of poise. They also do Violet dirty. Okay, look, I want to be really positive because I actually did really enjoy it. But one of the characters I loved from last season, in fact, I loved the three older women. I loved the Queen, Violet, and Lady Danbury. And they, as you so rightly say, have taken the Queen out of her power by making her so, I don't even know how to say it. It's almost, it's not weak, but it's flippant, where before she enjoyed her power and her status and could be amused by the doings of the small people running around her. Violet was a steadfast, warm, strong woman. In this first episode, she's constantly twitching and worried and putting her hand to her tummy and her hands up and everything. It's like, these are not the people we met last season. Yes, we know Eloise objects to it, but I don't see that she'd have this huge once she's there and walking forward. Why is there such a huge problem? I think they've done some of the characters dirty, and unfortunately it's the older women characters they've done dirty, because one of the characters we really loved from the book was Mary, and where's Mary?
Mary's mute is what happened. Like, mm-hmm. Please. But and Daphne, right? Stop trying to make Daphne happen, because you didn't bring Jean Page back. So why you keep putting Daphne down my throat? Like, I don't get it.
And again, like, it just goes back to what Sarah said. Like, Eloise was raised for this. Eloise would know how to do a curtsy and how to keep your balance and what sort of smile to have. She's been trained in all of these things, whether she wants to have been or not. Yep. And so having Daphne just in the carriage to be like, well, look at a picture across the room so you don't fall. Like, enough. Get out of here. You're done.
Yeah. And I don't know if part of that was just, I mean, the show's intention to try to bring in, like, even though obviously, like, what people were wanting if they wanted to see anyone on the season would have been Simon, not necessarily Daphne. But I don't know if that's why they were also trying to bring in some sense of normalcy, you know, normalcy from what they saw in season one by bringing in some Daphne. But again, like we've kind of said with Eloise, like, she knows these things, and she actually even references a lot in the season, like, this is something Daphne taught me, or this is something that I'm aware of because I've gone through all of this sorts of stuff. So that's where I think sometimes I found it funny when she was being super, super awkward with things, because yes, like, I get it, but it's also like at this point, is it, you know, like, is it just kind of just you just showing your extreme, like, apprehensive to this idea, which I get, but also I think it's a bit too much, because it's like, I know you're not this awkward, you guys, like, you know, the queen, you have that, you kind of had that kind of talking, working relationship in a sense. So it's like, you're nervous all of a sudden. So I think there's that sort of disconnect where it's a little confusing. And it would have made more sense, like, I guess, prior to some of those interactions she had with the queen in season one, if that were, you know, how she'd be now, if that makes sense.
I mean, one of the great things that we do get is more Lady Danbury. I'm a Lady Danbury stan, and having said, you know, I like the older women, here's one that retains her power, her enjoyment, her knowledge, her acerbicy, and comes up against someone who challenges her in that. So in season one, Lady Danbury was unchallenged. In season two, she's challenged by Kate. This is a fascinating relationship. We didn't have it in the book. This is a really positive addition for me, is the Lady Danbury Kate relationship, where Kate stands up to Lady Danbury, where she questions her, where they are sort of crossing swords, as it were. And it just made me long for more Kate when I saw this.
Yeah. But before that, you know, we want to also, I think, set up then, because they're giving us this Eloise moment. So let's get into it, because Eloise, right, is happy at the Queen's reception. She gets to leave, but it's the juxtaposition of Eloise and Penelope, where Eloise is now faking her dance cards because she doesn't want to dance, versus Penelope, who we, I think, get to see a little bit of how the whistle down thing happens, because she gets to talk a little bit about how, well, I'm a wallflower, and that's kind of how I end up getting the tea. And then I love that she's kind of just getting the information from all the servants. So Eloise wasn't too wrong last season when she's like, maybe one of the servants is a Lady Whistledown, because they do have the tea. But another irritating moment, no offense, Eloise stands, because Eloise keeps interrupting Penelope's gossip time with just like using her as a crutch. To get away from everyone. Yeah,
like, literally, Eloise has no social skills at all, which doesn't make any sense based on her entire upbringing and life to this point. She's just like, yep, I will not even pretend I am trying to fit into this. I am going to just grab my bestie and go, which, like, super relatable. We've all definitely had times where we're at an event where we don't feel comfortable and we're just, like, looking for that one person to be our, like flotation device. But Eloise is really laying it on thick with Penelope in this episode.
I know, and it's just hilarious, because last season they had the same argument where Penelope said, you don't want this, but I want this life. So if you were to be a good friend to Penelope, let her be, and don't drag her in your shit, honestly. So whatever, it's fine. Penelope still persists and is able to kind of get Lady Whistledown ready to go without all these new obstacles.
We do also get Penelope fakes being a servant to pay the printer and does an amazing accent when she does so, and really is like quick with the math on the payments for the printers, and is like, I know that there should be this much in the bag, but we will take, you know, whatever, £2 less for your speed in printing. She's really got it all covered.
Yeah.
She wants the paper boys to have a raise. Yeah, that's a Dublin accent. This actress is from Galway, and she has a much softer accent, but she lays on this beautiful Dublin accent here in the cape and bonnet as the lady's maid. It's just, it's wonderful. It was unexpected. It's charming. It's believable. She can be tough because she's a you know, a working class girl, as it were, and she certainly sets the printer to right, including saying that the paper boys who are doing all the work need to have a raise. It was a lovely scene.
Well, you're, you know, sitting on your butt, so so that was a great, definitely a great moment. But I think it was nice to see kind of the a little bit more of her behind the scenes of what, you know, she's doing to get, you know, the papers out and in circulation. So I think that was kind of a really cool moment to know like what she's doing, but she's also trying to, you know, have a disguise and pretending to be someone else who's transmitting that sort of information and doing the work for Lady Whistledown so that people wouldn't necessarily figure out it's her or that she has a connection to Lady Whistledown. So I did really enjoy kind of seeing that background.
And she's writing Colin while he's away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's like her main thing. And I love that when Eloise was like, well, you're running through quills pretty quickly. And she's like, oh, because I'm writing to Colin. Girl, stop.
Eloise is like, I don't think his writing is very good. I had to stop reading his letters, which is just so rude.
Yikes. Again, why? That's your brother. Like, for no reason, the drag. Which,
to be fair, in Colin's book, there is, like, little snippets of, like, his writing about his journeys. Oh. And, like, TBH, they aren't very good. So Eloise didn't lie.
Oh, God, I got it. I just like Colin, so I thought it would, but oh my God.
No, I do love him.
But they play him this season also. Yeah, I gotta really make all him the look things like that a I, dodo.
Just like generally, like the things that I was saying that I loved about Colin in the book, they don't exist, but we'll talk more about that later. So
yeah. And let's check in with the Featheringtons as well before we get started with the other plots of it. So the Featheringtons are still waiting on said savior to arrive because they need a dowry still to pay Mr. Finch so that
Philippa.
Philippa. Oh, I was about to say Prudence, and then I was like, no, it can't be. Anyway, so that Philippa is getting married so that she can get married. And again, Mr. Finch, if you love her, you don't need the dowry. But, you know, it's fine. Whatever.
Well, there's also something to be said there as well, that it's been about a year since their father passed, and it would have been improper for her to marry while in mourning anyways.
Mm-hmm.
See, and here the question. The costumes are beautiful here. So they've moved into half mourning. So you come out of black and you go into the beautiful colors, but it's a rich brown. It's a navy blue. It's a maroon. So you're out of black, but you're not into your colors yet until you come out of mourning entirely. And so when we see them first, it's surprising and wonderful. And here the makers do understand that we've seen them before because they do understand what our reaction is going to be to the four of them in these dark, attractive and flattering, but dark colours of half mourning. And I think it's a really beautifully set scene. Look, it must be said, everything's beautiful, right? The settings and the costumes and the dancers that are in the background that do the majority of the dancing at the balls, the people. There's a great sort of beauty in this world, and that is lovely to sink into. But it's worth stopping down to note things like this scene of the four of them in these complementary dark colours of half mourning that I really appreciated.
Yeah, I love that as well. And I will say the other piece of the Featherington moment is that they're looking to sell off some stuff so they can live, because it looks like they're down to bare bones in this lavish life that they wanted to lead. So that is kind of going to set them up for the whole season, but especially this episode. Until
only potatoes. That's the only thing that they're really.
That's all that lady knows how to cook.
Yeah, they have one. They have one servant left. They're all wearing last season's gowns, so no new sleeves for the Featheringtons. And you know, their housekeeper slash cook slash ladies maid really only knows how to boil potatoes. So that is what they're eating this season. And like, it could be worse. There could be worse things that they were eating.
I mean, potatoes are good. You could cook potatoes in a variety of ways, although probably not.
I don't think.
I think the British method of boiling potatoes is, I know for a fact it's not the best way to eat them, because that's how I grew up eating potatoes multiple times a week.
Listen, the
boiled
British
potato.
No, the British like conquered half the world for the spices, but still don't know how to use them in their own cooking.
Like, yeah, no,
in their own traditional
cooking. No, but I'm just saying generally potatoes are good, but
yes, definitely.
Are Featherington's gonna invent French fries or freedom fries? That is the question. Because please,
I mean, I don't think that this iteration of the Featheringtons is gonna figure that out.
Absolutely not.
Hope springs eternal, and you know, Lady Featherington is just going on about how when the heir arrives, they will be saved because, you know, he is a man of honor and he will, you know, help them out. So if they can all be, you know, engaged before he gets there, he'll pay their dowries, because he might not be like a nice man, but he'll do that much.
Yeah. And do we just want to wrap up that storyline? Yeah. So he does show up at the end of the episode, and he's Lord Featherington, now. Mm-hmm. But he's a young man. Yeah, he's not ugly, he's not fat, he's not mean-ish, but he's just like a middle-aged white dude seems nice. But
is he middle-aged?
I mean, feels middle-aged.
I feel like he looked to be like 32 at most.
Oh my god, I really thought he was like
40. I thought maybe he was mid-30s, but maybe I'm off. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I've only seen the one snip of him, so you guys would have a better idea. But
true.
Yeah,
he was like 40.
Yeah, he's not super old. He appears to be unmarried, and he's come from America.
Ooh, yeah,
the Americas.
Very, very
the far. Americas, yeah. His father's died, and he has inherited the title Lord Featherington. So there's a rather he thinks it's amusing to call Lady Featherington, and then say, "Oh, that's strange, because we're not married." It's like, "Oh, call your jets,
dude."
That'll
still work, right? You know, really strange, but he of course comes from the Americas, and he's already started taking care of things. So with Philippa, you know, that dowry to Finch is that Finch fellow is paid. The late Lord's books are on their way to him now, and he took liberty of moving Lady Featherington's possessions from her bedchamber. And then she's like, "Oh, you had my possessions moved?" He's like, "Well, the home is mine now, so I'm taking over the rooms."
Well, yeah, he's taken the master bedroom. Like,
he's the master. Makes sense.
And she's like, "What? I don't get it." But it's like,
you can't have an adjoining bedchamber with a new lord. Get out of here.
Just weird vibes is what we leave them with.
Yeah, definitely weird vibes.
The new Lord Featherington with. Yes. And now let's get to our main event, because Mr. Anthony, Lord Bridgerton, the Viscount, has decided it's time to take a wife. Okay. But we have no reason. We don't know why. In the books we do. But, you know, here we just know he believes it's time. You know, screw love. It's not for love. I just want to do it. So he is now going on a montage of what we get of interviews, not dates, interviews with women, with aspiring women. And then it's like brothel to bride, right? It's like constant back and forth where he's having sex in the night, leaving them some money because he's honorable, apparently. A lot of ass shots. And then we're getting him trying to interview these like very young women.
Yeah.
Oh, it was like so uncomfortable. And
are
then
you looking forward to being a mother?
Yeah, he's just like asking them ridiculous questions. He's turning them down for the silliest reasons. My favorite was when the Asian, one of the Asian suitors was like, well, I speak French and Latin. He's like, oh, but not Greek.
And I was like, she spoke like 3-4 languages and that's not enough for you, man.
How many does he speak? That's what I want to know.
And so it was very interesting. Or he'd be, you know, asking interview questions like, oh, so, you know, if you had, you know, a child who had struggled with overspending, like, how would you handle the situation? And of course, she was just kind of like.
Yeah, because it's like anytime one of the girls like passes his test, he just goes to the next level where he can stump them. Like, it's never ending the amount of questions he will have because he doesn't want any of these people to pass his test because he really doesn't want to be married. He just feels that he should.
But do you read? And then the girl's like, books?
Oh, that poor girl.
Yeah.
Oh, that poor girl. These are very, very young women. They're all very pretty and they're all very young. Yeah. He crosses them off violently in his notebook.
Yeah, he's got a list like Arya Stark and he is getting them all out.
Yeah.
Oh, God. But yeah, so it's just like a funny moment. Again, none of this happens in the books, but I appreciated it. I actually thought it was funny because I assumed that that's exactly how he would be because he's so no nonsense. Even in the book, he's like, no love. I just need to find a wife. So I honestly imagined that he'd be more like this, but the diamond had already like been told to us, I think, pretty early in the chapters, so I understand that they needed to add some drama because the diamond wasn't out yet. Things I feel like are beginning to change for Mr. Anthony because the Lord is, you know, on a stroll. Maybe he's working too hard and he's on his way to his next thing at dawn. But next thing you know, while he's riding on horseback, a woman is running through. He follows her because he's loving, one, her horse riding skills, and how she's riding the horse, because she's not doing it sideways. She is like the norm. I feel like the normal, quote unquote, we would ride a horse.
Yeah,
astride.
Yes. Mm. Ooh. And they get into a little bit of a competition, and she bests him.
And he's like, listen, we should have, if we had like chosen an endpoint and no, like a start, that you wouldn't get such a head start. And like, I would have obviously won. Like, he's like looking for every justification as to why he would have won the race if it was a fair race, which I feel like is, it's like in those Goose Goose Duck games, Sasha, when like after the game's over, you do like the full, like, let's break down what just happened. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I totally would have won if I just done this.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I should have killed him. He was on to me with Mike Bloom.
Yeah.
I love their little back and forth. And then she tries to say that, oh, I'm going to Mayfair, leave me alone. And then starts going the wrong way. So he does a little bit best her, which, again, I want to say in the books, like, she is not immune to this man's charm as much as she is in the series. So he flashes a little smile, sends her on the right way, and turns out this woman, and he asked for her name and if she's married, and she gives him nothing. But you know he loves not that. Funny.
She's like, I shouldn't be with strange men in parks at dawn who fail to leave me alone with their questions and just, you know, go away. But of course, Anthony's like, wow, this girl, I was worried she was going to fall off her horse. She didn't fall off her horse. So like, I'm intrigued. I want to know more, but she's not giving me that.
Because he wants to be challenged at the end of the day. We know that. He's to be basic in what he actually wants, let's be honest.
Yeah. And as we find out, she has no interest in finding a husband for herself. Her entire focus is on finding a husband, as we find out, for her younger sister.
Yes, because she is a stepdaughter of Miss Lady Mary Sharma, a noblewoman who actually, spoiler alert, was the diamond of her own season. So that's how we know that Kate has actually moved to London, like Sarah said, not for a marriage for herself, but for Edwina. So the trio actually showed up from India, which is very exciting. They're from Bombay, my hometown. And they're here to really create some, I feel like not create some waves, but get Edwina hitched. And Kate is like, listen, don't look at me. And they're staying with Lady Danbury, which does not happen in the books because in the books, they're just like not so well to do, so they kind of had like secondhand everything. Mm-hmm. But Edwina is so beautiful that like it kind of doesn't matter, is the point of
Lady Danbury is going to sponsor the two girls. Yes. At their first season. She does inquire as to Kate's age, because she is getting up there, and Kate says that she is 26, mm-hmm. And so very much on the shelf.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, I love their banter, I will say. Like, Lady Danbury and Kate have, like, the best scenes because, again, this banter should be with Anthony, but it's okay. but they're really, like, they're going at it toe-to-toe. And, like, I couldn't tell you who wins at the end. Like, there were different little battles won, but I don't know who wins the war.
And before she even met Kate, and before she had kind of made the acquaintance of basically Mary's daughters, we kind of have, well, where in the world is Kate? Kate's not at the residence. Where could she be? And Edwina, you know, said she went to look for her, but then she couldn't find her. And so then when they meet Lady Danbury and, like, talk to Lady Danbury, it's like, well, I thought you had another daughter. Like, where is she? Like, what's going on? And, of course, when Kate does come, she has, you know, mud all over the bottom of, you know, her outfit, because we know that she was, you know, riding in the woods. So that was definitely quite an, you know, interaction. But she said she wanted that, you know, morning air in the gardens, and really had a lengthy journey and wanted some freshness.
I feel like she also gets the last laugh when it's like, oh, perfect, everyone is here. And she's like, not yet. There's one more to our party. Yeah. My dog, Newton.
Newton was the best. So again, all the drama between Mary and Newton is now moved to Newton and Lady Danbury.
Yeah.
Because she's the one dragging Newton to hell with her looks. So, not enough Newton content, just period.
But at least it's a little bit fair, I think, when Lady Danbury probably was not expecting a dog to be on the furniture and carpet. And so I feel like it does narratively make a bit more sense.
I agree. And it's not a big deal. It's so cute. I love
feel Newton. Like you see like slight hints that Mary does not still seem super loving the dog, but obviously it's not, you know, they decided to kind of switch that up, and obviously because, you know, Newton is now in Lady Danbury's home, and Lady Danbury definitely was not expecting a dog.
This is a very good dog. Whoever this dog is.
Aren't they all?
Aww.
No, he's a menace. They're all good. They don't show it in the season, but he's a menace.
I did like Mary being like, take this dog for a walk before it makes a mess on Lady Danbury's rug. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mary's like, get the hell out of here.
Get that dog out of here.
Yeah. And I, so Lady Danbury is hosting a ball. But before we get to the ball, this is the best scene because Lady Danbury's like, great, I hired a French tutor for you. We're going to be doing this and you're going to learn this dance and that dance. And then Kate is like, nah, let me show off my sister instead. And I love that she's like, Bon, just start speaking French. Let's do it. And then Edwina's like a little parrot. She just starts answering everything. And then Kate, what we see is she's very protective of her sister and has like groomed her sister almost like she's her pageant coach, but you know, her like courtship coach. Mm-hmm. So that's like also another piece we get where Lady Danbury is like, oh, I don't need to work as hard on them. Got it. So I'll just concentrate on the ball and the queen, which is where we get to next because Material Girl is playing.
So good. So good.
Mm-hmm. I was so happy.
And they too are Material Girl.
Gargoyles, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It was perfect. I played the soundtrack for my husband and I was like, do you know what this song is? And he's like, no. And he's like, I can't remember. I don't know. And then I said it and he's like, not me. And he was like, how did I not get Material Girl? And I was like, why? Who are you?
So yeah, like, I would love to unpack that.
Yeah. I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, Madonna. And I was like, okay, sure.
Okay, Carson.
Yeah, we'll report back if I know more about him and Madonna.
Then again, you told me he guessed it, so I would assume you were assuming he may be able to guess it, right?
No, I mean the song, but just his like indignance was like not understanding was too much.
So I was just trying to laugh at him, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly.
Let her live. Edwina wants someone charming and handsome, and far be it from me to do a direct quote, but I will because Kate says that he will speak in a manner only your heart can hear. And I thought, what a beautiful description of finding your person. She says that his looks don't matter. And I thought this was lovely to take into a ball where it's all about looks and it's all about accomplishment and it's all about front and it's all about being material. Girls and or boys and or non-binary people.
Well, and she gives this beautiful advice, but then also is working behind the scenes to get her sister married off to a titled gentleman. So
absolutely
not the nicest. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because if she doesn't get her sister married, or rather, if her sister doesn't find someone that's titled, looks like the Sheffield. You know, with the grandma with lots of internalized racism, but anyway, we'll talk through that later, isn't going to give them any inheritance because at the ball, we finally understand that Queen Charlotte is so salty because, listen, this iteration of the queen seems very – she holds grudges. She petty, okay? So we like it. It's fine. And Queen Charlotte is – just staring at Mary and is like, oh, nice for you to come back. I just wish you would have told me when you left.
Yeah. Well, for what? The final farewell, you know?
What in what universe does someone need to go to the queen and be like, yo, I'm leaving town? Like, you are literally the queen of England at like the height of England's power. How about chill out?
Maybe it's because she's the diamond, so maybe she's expecting some sort of, I don't know. Why does the diamond have so much access to the queen?
That's the ultimate question.
But that's like, the only thing I can think of why maybe that's why she maybe, but obviously she's probably just doing a slight because it's like,
because I think
he caused drama.
I think she's more so mad that her diamond ran away with someone who's not like titled and wealthy, but like the way she's saying it makes it sound like she's mad she didn't get like a goodbye card, and it's just nonsensical.
Yeah, it's like, were they besties? I don't think
so. Right?
No, I mean, they're closer in age, right? So that's why I was like, you picked a diamond that was like your peer. That's very weird. But whatever. Let me not fact check this.
I mean, I think that the previous season and this season is teaching us that for Queen Charlotte, the incomparable that she selects, the diamond she selects, is like her representative, and what that girl does reflects on her. I think this is what the series is trying to teach us. And so if we have that in mind, then we understand perhaps she's very plain about it.
So just not getting the courtesy of getting the goodbye was more embarrassing for her.
But it's like, didn't you just get punked the last season? Like, what are you doing? Because last season, Daphne left your nephew in the dust. But okay, you know, sure. Well,
and she's still the queen.
Yeah, also
she's
bad.
The queen.
Don't you have a job? And yeah, also the ton is very much not forgetting also of Mary, and they're also being like, I can't believe she left with a clerk in India who already had another child. And then here you see like how Kate is really othered and really seen as less than even the other two women that she's with, even though they're kind of equal, right? And maybe not in quote unquote looks, even though Simone Ashley is freaking beautiful, but allegedly what we are to believe. But there is something that will put a stop to this gossip, and that is Lady Bridgerton and the Viscount, because baby, they walk in and give Violet a damn microphone, because she says, and the Viscount is looking for a wife, and she screams that out.
And I was like, did you really just do that? And she's like, you know, yeah, I did. I'm trying to get everyone to know what the situation is.
At the start of the episode as well, Anthony asks for her ring. And she's like, have you chosen your wife? And he's like, no, but I want to be ready for the moment. And she's like, I'll hold on to it until you find your wife. So she's like, oh, I know he is ready to be wed. And I am going to make sure that all of the mamas and the debutantes know so they can throw themselves at Anthony.
Yeah, she ran up to him right away.
Spit
spot. Let's get on with it. Come on. He's getting very long in the tooth.
Yeah, and she wants him to find love, which is why she's like, I'm not going to give it to you right away. So you just give it to someone that you find worthy. Like, that checks the box, that has the right resume. But really, you need to be in love. So call me when you're in love. Then we'll figure something out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's not exactly what he's looking for. He's just looking for someone who fits the role. So
yeah, he wants, you know, someone with a pleasing face, acceptable wit, genteel manners, to credit of Viscount, and also a little bit of a brain.
But even that last one, not so much.
Yeah, he's like, that would be nice, but, you know.
Half a brain.
Exactly. And then, you know, finally he gets a breather. This is when things start to go to hell for him, because there are all these little quote-unquote locker room talk these fellow group of men are doing outside. Horrible. The other men are very happy that Anthony is there so that it can take the spotlight off them, and the mamas will leave them alone. It's like, then why are you here? You know, just like, don't come to the ball. You have a choice.
They're there to find a woman to wed bed and bread.
Yes, because... Blech. In their conversations about young ladies of the society, that's all they care about. They don't really want to find love. They just want an indispensable wife and, you know, future mother of his children. And Anthony kind of agrees. He's like, love has nothing to do with it. You know, cute, what's love got to do with it?
And that's why Eloise ran away from them quick.
Yeah. And then unbeknownst to them, though, Miss Kate Sharma, also, it's not Sharma. I don't know what the hell that is. There's an R. Sharma has been eavesdropping the whole time. And this is when she's trying to get away calmly, but Miss Klutz trips over. Anthony's like, oh, there you are. And he's like into her, I feel like, at this moment. I feel like if she was nice to him, they maybe would have had a moment.
Well, and I also think, though, even going back to the horse riding scene, I feel like she's not totally immune to it either. Like, I feel like she just won't allow herself to have that moment. But she's like, ooh, something is stirring. Let me squash that down and not deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But and we know her priority. It's her sister. So she's like, nope, that's not a thing. Pushing feelings, pushing emotions pushing those sorts of thoughts away.
I'm not the pretty one. I'm the old, dried up old maid. It is the 26. Pretty one, the younger yeah. sister.
Also, and, sometimes I thought she actually had the nicer dress than Edwina. Just throwing that out there. Like, yeah. Even though, like, I know that, like, technically, well, I mean, I guess maybe they weren't necessarily doing it as much in this as they did in the books, but I just, like, feel like they didn't necessarily make her really super less than, if that makes sense. And I was just like, oh, I actually like this outfit better, or it looks like she's standing out more to me, Kate, than Edwina is in this moment.
Yeah, they had Edwina in the beautiful pink dress, absolutely mm-hmm. stunning and gorgeous, but yet Kate was in the more whitish debutante-esque dress, which was an interesting choice.
Oh yeah.
Well, she is debut. I mean, technically it's her first season as well with Lady Danbury as the sponsor. It's just that Kate herself has no interest in the husband, in the marriage market.
Yeah. But I think it's all just, unfortunately, guards up because she feels less than. And again, in the book, that's a little bit more obvious that she is seen as second fiddle to the gorgeous Edwina. But whatever, because they start arguing again. And I love that Kate is like, your requirements are all wrong. They're horrible. I don't appreciate this. And then I love that she also says, no, I take issue with a man that thinks like this and treats women, you know, basically as like breeding stock.
Mm-hmm. He's going to be like, none of that was like, because I know, because of course he's going to be like, oh, well, I was just doing it because I was with the guys. But obviously she cut him off and she's like, no, like you should, you know, just because you think you have your pleasing smile and, you know, charm that you think the women are going to accept that. But no, absolutely not.
Yeah, and she insults his horsemanship before she runs inside to get her sister pretty quickly. So drag on drag always.
But of course, he didn't take it as a full drag. He's like, oh, well, so you find my smile pleasing, don't you?
Ugh. Yeah. And then they leave the ball. This is where I feel like Kate was in the wrong, I will say, because Kate is getting to know, you know, Anthony's like, not the best side, but Edwina is like, has all these suitors. She's kind of getting things going. And Kate just like stops that. And it's like, we need to get the hell out of here because drags Lady Danbury and says, you did not prepare us for this lion's den. So we got to go. Why are you being so disrespectful? There's no reason.
I also found that so strange because she's like, well, we're so prepared. Like, I spent all this time preparing Edwina, so we don't need your help. And then all of a sudden she's like, oh, well, you didn't prepare us. Okay, well, thanks for the invite. Bye. I was like, huh?
Well, and it's really just because she felt a little something when she was talking to the Viscount. So she's like, we've got to go, right? And is just looking for any excuse to deflect from that. But... you know, they make a clean escape. No one's too, like, really upset. Like, Lady Danbury makes it seem like it's going to be, like, a huge thing for them to leave a party early. But I have to believe that there's people leaving parties early all of the time. You could just say Edwina had a headache.
Yeah, and apparently that makes her more desirable anyway if she leaves early. Which, not entirely wrong, but, like, Daphne last season, you need to give them something still. And if you just leave without any conversation, they're just not going to really talk to you.
Although it was a little, like, weird when she, like, you know, when Lady Danbury was trying to introduce her to Violet. And she's just like, charmed. Okay, bye. Leaving.
Yeah, it's like, rude.
It's like, she's rude. You just be like, hi, nice to meet you. And then, Lady Danbury. Okay, this.
And I'm surprised Violet didn't see that as a red flag. What a great lady. Because I would have been like, who are you to not even talk to me? Like, shut up.
Like, at the very least, be like, nice to meet you. I'm so sorry. I've got a headache.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, my sister is unwell. Just use the sister.
Yeah. Yes. It's horrible. Long story short. But Lady Danbury does take her to task. And this is when they have that conversation about, don't tell Edwina, but we need the money for the dowry, bro. So we got to do what we got to do. And get the money from her grandparents. Anyway, so now that ball is over, it's time for ball number two because the Queen Charlotte is now hosting her own ball because Lady Whistledown is pressuring her to name a diamond, which I can't. Like, why does Whistledown have so much pull over the queen? It's embarrassing.
I literally got a text from my sister the other day where she's like, why does the queen care so much about Whistledown? And I was like, I couldn't tell you. The queen isn't even in the books. Like, I really can't help you with this.
Right?
Yeah.
I think it's been established.
I guess she just doesn't want negativity on the crown. And so I don't know, but it's still very weird because it's like, we don't even know who this person is. You know,
I don't know. I mean, I think it's very well established in season one that Lady Whistledown can get under the queen's skin. That the opprobrium of the masses means something to Queen Charlotte. And while we have talked about, you know, her power and her stature being taken away, why it worked last season is she had the power, she had the stature, but she had this one flaw, which was that Lady Whistledown could get under her skin. And they've kind of muddied that this season with her being less, you know, being able to be got to by everybody, whereas before it was only Lady Whistledown that could just get through her defences. And this was a really nice character note. So here Lady Whistledown says, well, the Queen better name a diamond or I will. And the Queen does not like that.
Nope, she's not thrilled.
Oh, she's challenging the Queen at every turn. But anyway, so now it's ball time. Whistledown. The Queen is moving quick. She's like, great, let's try to get someone. And she's personally greeting all the young ladies. And then she meets Eloise, who we know, again, she's befriended in season one. And Edwina as well. So during the ball, Eloise, you know, really tries to get past the men, but somehow she does get caught up with the Queen, which I loved. And she's trying to be kind of shady with the Queen, where she's like, oh, you're talking about diamonds. I actually loved emerald. And the Queen says, oh, you knew I loved emerald? I knew
so
it.
So thoughtful.
So thoughtful. Wow.
So thoughtful.
Oh my God. Eloise said, nah. Like, and this is going to get me screwed. I hate this. Why did this happen?
I accidentally charmed her.
And the funny part about this, too, was, like, you know, Anthony's like, well, I'm going to get married to whoever the diamond is. And so, of course, his brother's like, well, so what if Eloise becomes the diamond? What are you going to do then at that point? Because it was point, like, he was the one who was clearly impressing the Queen.
Oh, I can't.
So
I
funny. Really
can't. Oh my God.
But like, it just, again, it doesn't make any sense. Like, and Eloise has no interest in it. And she makes her way out clean. She does not ultimately get named the diamond.
Yes, indeed. And meanwhile, in the ballroom though, Anthony is now getting Edwina and they're dancing. And I love that Lady Danbury is meanwhile working on the Queen to give the Sharmas a chance. So the Viscount is like very taken by Edwina because she's very chill in how she answers his questions and even says, oh, these questions don't bother you. You're okay with this. And she talks with such ease. So obviously by the end of the ball, after a little prodding, I feel like from Lady Danbury and the conversation early in the episode, Edwina is the new diamond, y'all.
And Anthony has found his wife.
Bam. Oh, bam. My God. I loved it because, you know, immediately Kate was like, absolutely the hell not. Couldn't be me.
She literally grabs Edwina and is like, get out of here. You need to stay away from that man. Absolutely not. He is the worst. You cannot.
Which is like low-key what happens in the book. I feel like where she's very much like, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This is not happening.
She's getting very good at yeeting out of balls right left and center, old Kate.
Oh, Lord. Sarah. I will also say again, in the book, like, Edwina is already the diamond, so we kind of just start at the ball at this part where Colin is actually dragging Anthony, and he introduces Anthony to Kate, and they have a little spat because Anthony thinks Kate's into him, and instead Kate is like, I know who you is and I don't want it.
It's a big flashback to Daphne and Simon meeting where Simon thinks Daphne has maneuvered things in order to have a conversation with the Duke, whereas Daphne is just trying to escape. And so it could have been a fun little reflection on that, but instead they chose not to give it to us.
Of course not.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I talk about where I meant earlier, how like those great Colin moments are not present, that I thought were quite amusing. But, you know, I think... You know, we definitely get a lot of interesting dialogue and conversations nonetheless with other characters at this ball and the events in this episode.
Yeah, and the almost last piece of this is that Penelope is very excited because one, even though Eloise has kind of been cramping her style, she's figured it out. She's like, it's fine. I'll still get it to work. And she is also hearing a little bit of Eloise's like stress with Lady Whistledown. This is where I think Penelope's getting a little frustrated with Eloise too, because she's like, didn't you say you loved her? And aren't you like very into her? So what's going on? What's up?
Yeah, well, Eloise has been reading, you know, the Emancipation of Women and essays about the rights of women. So Eloise is turning into a bit of a suffragette, and she, in her, you know, very youthful way of grabbing onto ideas, still admires Lady Whistledown, but wishes that she wrote about more things than just gossip.
Yeah, it's also the same old, and she just is feeling a constant reminder of how trapped she is. She knows that she's constantly being compared to her sister Daphne and living up to that, and, you know, she doesn't want to live up to that, but, and I think so that's also just kind of, she's just not feeling as great about just the things that are written, and it's not as, I think, relevant or as interesting to her anymore. And so, you know, and then Penn's like, you know, she never thought of it that way, but no one notices her. But like when you're invisible, you have the amusement without any expectations of popularity, and it frees you. And so Eloise is like, do you think this is why Whistledown remains anonymous? She's like, perhaps.
Well, and I think it's a big shift because in season one, we see Eloise really wanting to know who Lady Whistledown is and really admiring her because Lady Whistledown is a woman who is getting what she wants and living her own life free of other people's expectations. And now it seems like she's forgotten that, and it's all about the content that Lady Whistledown is writing rather than considering the fact that Lady Whistledown is still a woman who is doing what she wants and, you know, obtaining freedom for herself in a way that is outside of what society expects. So I really think that, though I do believe that Eloise would be reading Mary Wollstonecraft, I also think that this complete shift about Lady Whistledown is out of character and does not make sense.
Yeah, and yeah. It just feels like it's very much, she's like, only when things go my way and in my lane, and if it's exactly how I would say it, then I'm going to like it. But again, why are we still talking about Eloise? Ooh, yeah. Because that's constantly, this whole episode, it felt like, again, we're on Eloise's journey, not Kate and Anthony's. Because where are they?
Well, I guess one other, I know you're like, oh, Eloise, let's not talk about Eloise. But one other moment, there was one other moment from this episode that I thought was interesting as people were starting to think, oh, maybe Eloise might be the diamond. You know, there was that interaction with Cressida. She's like, oh, you know, maybe you should hang out with new people, like, you know, me and my crew. And stuff like that. And, you know, Eloise is like, no, never. Like, there's no way. Like, I'd rather die. And so so a lot of that sort of conversation when she's having Eloise with Penelope about Lady Whistledown, you know, kind of stemmed from that whole sort of situation of, you know, Cressida being like, oh, you shouldn't be hanging out with Penelope. And she's like, well, I'd rather hang out with Penelope. And then in some ways, Penelope's probably like, you're hanging out too much with me. Yeah, so it's definitely it was quite an interesting, I think, yeah. Situation.
It's the thing where we feel like we shouldn't have to talk about Eloise, but they've made her a major part of the season.
Yeah.
That's right. So we have to.
Exactly. And that's why. But anyway, Lady Whistledown, Penelope gives Eloise a little bit of a bone because they do a little drag where it questions if the diamond tradition that, you know, gives women, like that pits women against each other for one, and secondly, says that a woman, shouldn't they be valued for more than just their looks and skills, and their frivolous skills rather. So Eloise says, yes, I love this. I love it. But Queen Charlotte said, nope. Now let's make your job even harder because you challenged me. And that is where this episode ends for us. But is there anything we missed that y'all want to highlight?
Well, I just want to say that I really enjoyed watching it. And if it wasn't for the passionate attachment that the show managed to make me have in season one, I fought it, like Kate is fighting Anthony's charms. I fought it, but I succumbed. And I must say, talking through the season with you all, not only our two-part overview a year ago, but the episode by episode, I really appreciated the themes, and we talked when we talked about the book about what my hopes for season two were, and I hoped that were we to see the secondary characters, that their plot lines would either mirror or be oppositional to the main character lines. So because of my now high expectations, I felt very attached. I mean, I've already said I feel that a few of the characters that I particularly liked or perhaps identified with, I feel have been done slightly dirty so far. Eloise among them. She's not an idiot. She was never an idiot, and now she's slightly a fool, which I don't appreciate. However, if I didn't have that attachment, and even with that attachment, I did enjoy this first episode. It's very beautiful, very happily slipping back into that world. I loved the snark about English society from Kate. She's an outsider. The tea in particular, I couldn't agree with her more. And I am looking forward to watching it all. I'm looking forward to talking it all through with all of you.
Same.
Yes. I do think it's also just important to note before we go, we had mentioned that when Edwina is named the diamond, Anthony has, like, quote, found his wife, but he literally goes to Violet and it says, I have found my wife and I'm going to marry Edwina Sharma, just to clarify that.
So, you know, so you can get that ring ready for me, that sort of thing. But this is very, very small, but also there was interaction in the episode where you know, we have Madame Delacroix. She ends up actually at the
house. Oh, yeah.
And, well, you know, Genevieve decided to, you know, tell Benedict, yeah, no, I don't have time for our shenanigans anymore. I have things to attend to in my career. So, sorry.
Again, another weird thing, because Madame Delacroix went from, like, this easy, breezy, like, fun businesswoman to now like very serious, stressful lady, which again we'll uncover a little bit more in the as the season goes on, but yeah, interesting character arc for another lady we loved.
Perfect. I can't wait.
Yes. And with that, I actually wanted to call out some of our 5-star reviews, y'all.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, we have four. So our first one, I want to read them out loud, obviously, is our own leader here at PSR saying, the best Bridgerton podcast, enough said. Obviously, it is not biased, just so y'all know. And LL from Earth said they can't wait for season two because love these podcasters, love the show, keep up the great work. Thank you,
LL.
Thank you.
We will.
Yeah. And Johnny BRX said a diamond of a podcast, which is, I think, the cutest and sweetest thing. Because the ton is a buzz with the latest and created PSR podcast. The four main leads, unique and diverse in their own respect, shine through and make the listening experience a feast of the ears. But for real, happy to get some more representation into my feed and different lighthearted shows covered too. Listen, it's gonna be fun. I'm excited for the representation. Like, seriously, the song from a Bollywood movie, I can't wait for that episode because I can't wait to talk about it more. But let's just say I hope that Renap lands on me soon because that might be one of the movies I pitch.
Yes.
Oh my god. And lastly, AT Barra or at Barra said, I hate how I'm attracted to Anthony.
Same.
Correct. Read the books. It's even worse because then you're like, God, I really love him. But they say 10 on 10 podcasts. We'll listen to these four talk about literally anything. But Bridgerton brings out some of the funniest takes they have, like boiled potatoes. I don't know. Looking forward to season two coverage. Thank you, everyone, for leaving us reviews. Please make sure you keep reviewing us, because listen, let's get trending. with Bridgerton podcast. Yes. Like,
and again, we only accept 5-star reviews. It's actually broken. If you try to give anything but 5 stars, it won't let you. So don't even bother.
Yeah, it won't. It won't submit, I believe. So don't try. Is the point?
Are any of you familiar with the Irish writer Marion Keyes? She writes contemporary romantic comedy, light and wonderful reading.
I don't think I've read any.
Yeah.
Well, she tweeted out recently, won't someone do a podcast breaking down Bridgerton, you know, in a cultured and fun way? And one of our fans added us and said, it's already happening. It's already happening.
What? Shout out to them, whoever.
How did
is.
I not see this?
What a dream.
Yeah, I will send it along to you.
DM because let and, me,
yes, tag. I blushed that we were in front of Marion Keyes. I thought, oh, good. Hi Marion, if you're listening.
Oh, hi. Well,
hi, Marion, I'll read some of your books.
Yeah, obviously. 100%. Can't wait for you to be picked up by Shondaland. I don't know.
Yes.
Good vibes to you. And with that, I think it's time we close this episode of The Dark Walk, y'all. And with that, Geneva, where can people find you?
People can find me at Peace Love Jen on Twitter, where I tweet about all the reality TV that I'm watching and my random events in life. So that currently includes Big Brother Canada, Survivor 42, and the variety of other fun shows that are on. And there's so many Netflix reality TV shows that are coming out soon. I'm also tweeting about Temptation Island and the courtship as well. And you can also listen to that fun courtship podcast that I did with Sarah, Asia, and Haley. That is on the wrap up aspect of the network. And you can also find me at Silent Podcasts, where I podcast from time to time, but also upload the content. And you can find us on Anchor, Spotify, Apple, and anywhere else you listen to your podcasts.
Yeah. And Sarah, where can people find you?
Well, it's very kind of Geneva to say that it was a fun podcast about the courtship. I think everybody else was fun. I dragged that show to shit. But perhaps that might be interesting.
Well, I've gotten positive feedback. Some people were like they needed another podcast. So they, like, the listeners found it fun regardless. So
yeah, I mean, I certainly just reformatted the entire show and came up with like a really good show. So I hope that they make my really good show. But meanwhile, just watch The Courtship. It's basically The Bachelor, you know, a very strange sort of
It's
bachelor
currently on USA wedding. Airing after Temptation Island.
Mm-hmm. That 11 p.m. spot on Wednesdays.
I know.
Yes.
So prime.
But if episode 3, though, y'all, it turned up the heat. It's actually
I want to believe you, but I find it difficult. So you can follow me on Twitter at Sarah Carradine. If you like true crime or you want to start liking true crime, True Crime Tuesdays is a drop on RHAP, our podcast Crime Scene, drops on a Tuesday. And that's my podcast with Murray Forth.
Great. Check it out, everyone. And speaking of Temptation Island, Kirsten, where can people find you?
Yes. So you can find me and Maggie Morgan breaking down every episode of Temptation Island over at rephaswebsite.com/hotdummies. As well, Mary Kwiatkowski and myself are talking about Riverdale every week now that it's back over on KowskiCast. That is Cow with a K. And I have my weekly BoJack Horseman rewatch podcast with Lindsay Wilson over at BoJack Horse Pod. We are into season 6, so almost done. You can also follow me everywhere at Kirsten Said What, including twitch.tv/Kirsten Said What. Sasha, where can they find you?
And you can find me on Twitter at funsize_04. As well, I will be on RHAP, I believe, this week, covering Big Brother on Thursday. So check me out there as well. And with that, thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Bye.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper?
a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.